What's in a salad niçoise?
So that's always a big topic indeed, because
I thought I'd start off with the big topic, big question.
Indeed. So yeah, the people, you know, in France, food is, of course, holy, is very important. So as soon as you put the wrong ingredients, the locals get easily mad.
Bonjour. This is Fabulously Delicious, the podcast that's all about delicious French food and the people that love it, cook it, produce it, talk, write, and photograph it. If you're lucky enough to go to the south of France, then you're doing yourself a disservice if you don't go to the lovely city of Nice, especially because the food in this southern city of France is some of the best food I've ever had. Around the world, French food can be renowned as sometimes not done properly. One dish that's often done badly, in my opinion, would be the salad niçoise. A salad niçoise in Nice, though, is one of the best food experiences you can have in France. Joining me today to talk about salad niçoise is none other than a fabulous French foodie who tours none other than the city of Nice itself, Pascal Belour. Welcome to Fabulously Delicious.
Hey, bonjour, Andrew. Thank you for having me in your podcast today.
No, and thank you. And thank you for this second introduction. And this time I have pressed the record button. Pascal, you were born in France and spent your early years in life in around Nantes. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. City of Nantes in the west of France.
In the west of France. Right. I always thought it was in the north of France. I don't know why I had it in my head that it was the north of France. What's Nantes like? What kind of a city is it?
So actually, I was raised in a smaller city called Machecoul, which is a bit south of Nantes. So more in the countryside, small, yeah, typical traditional French town.
How would you describe life as a young lad in France? It can't have been that many years ago.
Well, the place I grew up, Machecoul, was a nice traditional town in the countryside. And the very special thing about that town is that we had actually a ruin of a 13th century castle. So it was quite a cool place to hang around. And, you know, as a young guy, and like pretending you were like a, you know, like the old times, like on a horse.
A 13th century castle. Now, us Australians and the Americans listening, we don't get that often a chance to live in towns that have 13th century castles. So that must have been fabulous for your imagination. When you were born in Paris, you get to grow up with all of the sights, the sounds, the smells that come with living in Paris, and how that is so completely different to the rest of the world, you know, where we get to live. I can imagine the same thing for when you get to live in the ruins of a 13th century castle. It must do wonders for your imagination.
Yeah, it's really indeed. Well, when you're so young, you don't really realize it. But nowadays, I'm a tour guide. That's my main job, tour guide. So I'm sure that, like, of course, already have all the influence of all the, like, these castles, etc., all this history around is probably one of the things that influenced me and made me like all this and made me become a tour guide.
Tell us, Pascal, how did your parents meet?
So it was quite special. They so my father is French and my mother is Dutch, and actually they both went to Switzerland. My father to work as a chef in a hotel restaurant, and my mother as a waitress for the winter season, and that's how they met at work in Switzerland. And when the season was over, they were a couple, and then they decided to move to the region where my father is from, close to Nantes, and there in this little town of Machecoul, they took over an old hotel restaurant, and that's where I spent my first year. So it was a very nice experience.
Wonderful. What type of restaurant was it that your dad founded there?
So, well, he took over this hotel restaurant, and what he did was serving traditional French food from that area. And so this restaurant was actually divided into two. There was one part where it was like the biggest room where we had mostly like truck drivers that would make a quick stop there for lunch, and then they just had the choice on the menu between, you know, two starters, two mains, two desserts. And then the other room of the restaurant was a bit more, let's say, elaborate with a proper menu, and then where people could take a bit more time to enjoy their the mule.
That would be a hard job because you would have the sort of, as you described, the with the truck, there would be obviously busy sort of periods and people coming through, and then you've got and you know sort of the what you're serving, but you wouldn't know the numbers that are going to be there any given day. But then with the other end of the stick, you're also doing a wide range of things for what would it be like a local, more like a local clientele. That would be like regulars, but they might order a whole lot of things. That's a lot of hard work there to have two different types of restaurants in one restaurant.
Yeah, indeed. I always saw my parents working very hard. Yeah, it was very out of rush lunchtime. And so well, they managed. They were quite proud of that.
Did they get you to pitch in, so to speak? Were you washing dishes or peeling potatoes as
well,
a youngster?
I was quite young, but I remember, yeah, I would like serve the bread to the tables, for example. So.
And at home, so was your dad the cook or your mum?
Yeah, my father was in charge of the kitchen and my mother was in charge of serving. And
so was the restaurant then your... The restaurant kitchen, was that your home kitchen?
Yeah, we lived there, yeah, indeed.
Wow.
We had the restaurant upstairs, the hotels, and in the courtyard, we had a little house where we were like sleeping, but we were basically living in the hotel restaurant.
Right. Fabulous. Is your mom a good cook?
Yes, she's a good cook, yeah. Well, the Dutch cuisine is a bit different than the French cuisine, of course, but yeah, she makes Dutch meals, yes, indeed.
What's your fondest food memory for when you were growing up?
Well, obviously, my father. I was seeing him in the kitchen, but also because my parents were working, of course, very hard and are very busy. So I spent a lot of the holidays with my grandparents. So I really admired my grandmother, the way she made the like food, and of course she had more time, so she would really, you know, always try to make things that I really liked. So yeah, I would say that I've got very good memories about both my grandmother and my father.
Did your grandmother have a specific dish that she enjoyed making or that you enjoyed eating?
Yeah, so, well, of course, you know, grandparents, different generation and everything homemade. So I remember for Christmas, we always had the big Christmas lunch. And then in France, you know, it's about eating. So we spend the whole day having the great Christmas lunch. And then you rest a bit with little games. And then, of course, you don't go home before having a little light Christmas dinner, something more simple. And that was always a homemade rabbit pâté that my grandparents would make, so that we really like buy, you know, the rabbit and all the herbs and, you know, do everything, you know. So that was, I remember, was always... with the highlights of the Christmas day, the homemade rabbit pâté from the grandparents.
Wow, rabbit pâté. I would love that now. But did you not have Bugs Bunny in France when you were a child? I mean, that would have put you off eating it, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I know. Well, you know, we're raised a bit, yeah, it's like the French tradition. You know? The other funny thing that my grandmother used to make, which maybe is not really common in Australia or other countries, is... eating the how do you call that, the tongue of the cow tongue. Yeah, so yeah, maybe it's a bit strange as a child, but well, that was something as children we used to eat. And when I would arrive at my grandparents' home in the morning, then you would see in the kitchen this whole tongue, you know, entire tongue laying there next to, in the kitchen. And then we spend the morning preparing that, and then we would have had that for lunch. So yeah, it was something very... I really like that, I remember.
How old were you when you moved to the Netherlands?
I was 8 years old when I moved to the Netherlands.
Did you want to become a chef when you were growing up?
No, that's not, was never something. I like food, but no, I was never planning on becoming a chef, no.
How did you end up in tourism?
Because I studied import exports, international trading. During this few years at business school, they really promoted that you would do like a stage practice, you know, in different countries. So I was lucky to go 6 months to Spain, and the final year we had to work on a project which was like helping a Dutch company to export their products to another country. And I found a Dutch company that wanted to export their products to France, to the south of France. And then I got finished my studies, and then this company really settled in the south of France, in Cannes, close to Nice. So I followed the company, and we worked together for a few months and helped a bit with the setup, because I of course speak fluently French, and the members of this Dutch company were not all perfectly in French. So yeah, it was a good way to have my first little job after studying. And then I was there in the south of France. I didn't really plan going there. And then I thought, okay, we'll just stay 6 months. And then I stayed something like 15 years in the south of France. So.
Tell us about Nice. Why did you fall in love with Nice and want to be there in such a wonderful city?
Yeah, so as I told you initially, I didn't plan on to stay very long in on the French Riviera, but indeed, I fell in love with the place. First of all, you can say the climate. It's like great weather all year long. We have 300 days of sun per year. So it's very comfortable. It's a big city. So there is, Nice is the fifth biggest city in France. So there's everything you need in the city. I'm more a city person. So for me, it's perfect to live there. And we got the second airport of France. So if you can afford and have time for holidays, it's easy to travel everywhere from Nice to Europe, the world. And and then started to work in tourism. After Paris, the French Riviera is the second most visited area in France. So work-wise, it's perfect for me, of course. So, and it's a great city. You meet people, quickly made a lot of friends. So I felt felt home in Nice very easily, very quickly.
You're listening to Fabulously Delicious, the podcast. It's all about French food and the wonderful and fabulous people that make it. If you're a business that has a connection to French food or France, and you'd like to support Fabulously Delicious and reach a whole new audience, then please get in touch. The more support we can get to bring fabulous French foodies to the world and highlight classic dishes, new and improved ones, or just little known regional specialties, the better. My name's Andrew Pryor, and my motto in life is whatever you do, you should do it fabulously. Thanks for listening, and let's munch back into this episode with Pascal and talk all things salad niçoise. So that leads us to the salad niçoise and also niçoise food in general. The salad niçoise is one of those French dishes that if you haven't had one in Nice, then you haven't had one. Really, in my opinion, they're so fabulous. What's in a salad niçoise?
So that's always a big topic indeed, because
I thought I'd start off with the big topic.
Indeed. So yeah, the people, in France, food is of course holy, is very important. So as soon as you put the wrong ingredients, the locals get easily mad. So a real niçoise salad has got local ingredients, of course, and because of the history of Nice, between close to Italy and in France and the Mediterranean Sea and the Alps just behind, they have imported a lot of different ingredients from all over the world. So the ingredients of the niçoise salad are the tomatoes, which are traditionally coming from South America and arrived in Nice via the Spanish. Then we have the little onions, cebette in French. You have the celery, the radish. It should have basil, green peppers, and then fèvette in French, which is kind of small green beans. And these small green beans, the best one you have in the summer, they grow in the summer. So normally a real niçoise salad is perfectly in the summer. And then we have anchovies, salt, and olive oil. And then as the last ingredient is hard-boiled eggs. So all the ingredients are raw, except, of course, the eggs are boiled.
But that tuna would be cooked as well.
So normally it's anchovies.
Anchovies and not tuna. Indeed.
So because all these what are called the traditional meals of Nice, the Nice from Nice. At the beginning, Nice was quite poor, so these were meals. If the local people didn't have much money, so they used to put their anchovies still today, and then bit by bit. People have been putting their tuna, but their original tuna salad is with anchovies.
Well, it's just dawned on me. A light bulb has gone over the top of my head. I mean, I can't imagine, is tuna is not exactly a Mediterranean fish, is it? Is it?
Yeah, it's tuna. Yeah, it's tuna in the Mediterranean.
Oh, it is.
Yeah.
Oh. But okay, well, that light globe was wrong.
Initially, the tuna was much more expensive than anchovies, so that's why they you would put anchovies.
Ah, okay. The amazing Delia Smith, who was one of my food heroes, called the salad niçoise one of the best combination of salad ingredients ever invented, apparently. And Gordon Ramsay says that it's the finest summer salad of all time. What is it, do you think, that makes this salad resonate with so many great chefs?
I would say probably because it's very healthy and, you know, it's part of the Mediterranean diet, which is, you know, so much discussed and talked about. And, you know, so I would say it's maybe one of the symbols of this Mediterranean diet. And it's, it's also called, some people also call it like the sunny salad, you know, because it's from the south of France, from the Mediterranean. It's beautiful. You can eat it as a starter or as a main. So.
There's a group in Nice. I think I'm pronouncing this correctly. If you know them, you'll know, and then you'll be able to correct me. The Cirque de la Capelina d'Or. Does that sound right? They're a group that are all about not deviating from local French recipes in Nice.
Oh, indeed.
Have you heard of them?
Yeah, this, indeed. So, it's they have created a label, so now the word we use is the label of the cuisine Niçarde. So Niçarde means niçoise. So basically, it's the label of the cuisine from Nice, and they are really, you know, protecting and preserving the traditional food from Nice. So, you know, they're horrified if you would put, like, I don't know, mayonnaise in your niçoise salad. That's of course not possible. So they have created this label, and then you have different restaurants in and around Nice that on their windows you can see this label. And then you're 100% sure that you will get the niçoise food, like, for example, the salad, served the traditional way with the local ingredients.
So they would be horrified if I had put tuna in my niçoise salad then?
Well, maybe tuna will be tolerated, but
Would be tolerated. Yeah. What about green beans and potatoes?
No. So that was that's not possible. So the great even the great chef Auguste Escoffier, he made the mistake of putting their green beans and potatoes, and it was heavily criticized. And still today, it's like that's the red line you can't cross.
The red line is Escoffier's niçoise salad. Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, I mean, that's a pretty big name for them to put a red line in.
It is.
You know?
Yeah. And actually, he was born not far from Nice, but just like a few towns on the other side of the river. And the river, like just after Nice, people see it as a border. So everyone from the other side of the river are not from Nice. And Escoffier, Auguste Escoffier, the great chef, he was from the other side of the river. So they say that's probably the reason why he didn't make the niçoise salad the proper way.
Do you make a niçoise salad at home or when you're in Nice, or do you go out to have one?
No, I would go out to have one too. That would taste much better if I have it out then at home.
Can you tell us the best place in Nice to go for a niçoise salad if we promise that we'll all come on one of your tours when we come to Nice?
Well, there are different places where they make the perfect niçoise salad. But, maybe if you come to Nice for the first time, it's great to go to the main square, what we call the flower market. And there we have a great restaurant called the Safari. And they make the best niçoise salads of that square.
That's a great tip. Okay, I'm going to look that one up. And the next time I'm in Nice, I'm going to do one of your tours, and I will go and have a niçoise salad there as well. There is a famous politician from Nice, although I think a controversial one, Jacques Médicin. Is it? I think it is Médicin. Apparently, he was a strict salad traditionalist. This is like people really get into their food there in Nice. Like they really, this is how it's supposed to be. And he had tips even for rubbing the salad bowl with garlic before adding any of the ingredients. Why are people so passionate about their salad niçoise and their Nice food.
Oh, you know, it's the, you know, in France in general, we are very proud of our history, our culture, and then this little area around Nice, which used to be until 1860 was not part of France. It was a small country with on one side the border with which is today Italy, and the other side the border with France. So I think that's the main reason why the people, you know, being close to two different countries, created a very strong sentiment of proudness of their language, because they had, for example, their own language and their food culture. And so today it's people are very proud and defend that. And again, as soon as you do something wrong, like put a potato or put mayonnaise, it's like, it's just too far.
What other foods is Nice famous for?
So Nice, we have a quite interesting sandwich that is called the pain bagnat, which you can translate with the wet bread. And basically it's a sandwich. And in the sandwich, you have basically all the same ingredients as a niçoise salad. So it's basically a niçoise salad in a sandwich. And that's very typical, a few typical meals. So in the old times, this what like workers or fishermen, you know, would bring this with them and that would be their lunch. And nowadays, if you go spend a nice day on the beach with your family and the kids, well, that's like a typical traditional meal that you bring with you to eat on the beach, the pain bagnat, so like a niçoise salad in a bread. And so in there, we add a few more ingredients, which is artichoke, garlic. And in this case, you can put tuna. That's okay to put the tuna in the pain bagnat.
Right. It's a wet sandwich. So it's going to be one of those sandwiches you'd eat with a knife and fork as opposed to picking it up then?
No, not really. You eat it like this, like a hamburger. Americans eat the hamburger and they call it a wet sandwich because traditionally you put a lot of olive oil on the bread. But the history is a bit different because these were, again, all these meals were meals from people, the poor people in the old times. And so basically what I did, you know, they had bread leftovers from the day before and that bread had become hard and you would not throw it away. So they would make it wet in these days with water. So then you could do the bread and on this bread, you would put the same ingredients as the niçoise salad, which were all quite not expensive ingredients.
Fabulous. I'm going to do that tomorrow because the ducks here in town by the river, by the bridge, they're getting a bit fat. So from all the bread that we've been feeding them. So I will try that. Niçoise food, it's a more relaxed, I would call it, style. I think rustic is the wrong word, but more relaxed, do you think, style of cooking?
Yeah. So again, all these meals were made to be made like easy and without too much money, and that you could maybe make the day before and bring with you to work because you had long days on the field or on the sea fishing. And so indeed it's easy and you eat it with your hands and it's in general healthy, so it's great food. Another typical meal in Nice that you would find if you go there and that they sell on the markets is called the pie saladière. Basically, the pie saladière is, we like to say, is the ancestor of the pizza. Right? The pizza dates from the 16th, 17th century in Naples. That's where it started. But this pie saladière was created roughly 200 years before that, in the early 15th century. Originally, so it's basically, the lower part is, it's like a pizza. But on the top, what you put is are onions. So, just onions that you would cook for about 2 hours. And so it's just a pizza base with onions and little anchovies and then a local black olive. So you can eat it cold or warm. And so it's in a way in the ancestor of the pizza. So it's originally from Genoa, from Italy, and it arrived easily and very quickly in Nice, basically.
The food market in Nice, down by the water, it's amazing. It'd be after when you go from there's the beach and then there's the arches and then you've got that food market. What's it called again?
So the official name is the Cours Saleya. That's the name of the square. Cours Saleya comes from sel, from salt, because a long time ago, that's where we had like a kind of warehouse where they were used to store the salt. And salt was also nicknamed the white gold because it was used to preserve other goods before we had electricity and fridges. So that's what the name is from the square. And we also nicknamed that market where they indeed sell fruit and vegetables, but especially also flowers. So the square is also more known as the flower market.
It is one of the best markets, I think, not just in France, but in the world. It really is a gem. I absolutely love it. They do an amazing, I think it's chickpea. It's sort of like a pancake/bread, the soca. Yeah, is that right? Soca.
That's right.
Yes, it's delicious. How many of those can you have in a day?
Well, it's quite filling. So you don't have much. So that's something we will eat. Like, you know, the aperitif is very popular in France. And so if you have a little aperitif, a little drink, so that would be in Nice, normally wine. We are one of the, we have one of the oldest vineyards in France. I believe that we produce wine there for 2,600 years. And so with your nice little glass of fresh rosé, you would have a little slice of this soca, and this soca is indeed made from with chickpeas and olive oil, chickpea flour, and it's cooked in the shape of a big pancake in the oven for a few minutes, and then you just cut off a slice, put a bit of pepper, and that's how you enjoy your nice rosé as an aperitif.
Amazing. Just down the street from the market, there was, I remember, because this was 2019, because of COVID, we haven't been able to go down recently. So this was 2019. There was an olive shop on one side that had amazing olive oils. And then directly opposite was this fantastic sweet store that had been there for a very, very long time, chocolates and things. Do you know what's the name of that store? Do you remember?
Yeah, you pronounce it Oer. Oer. Yeah, and it's indeed the oldest shop still open in Nice. So it's from, if I remember well, something like early 1800s. And Oer is a family originally from Switzerland, and they came to Nice. And they opened this little shop, and they are specialized in making little chocolates and other sweets. And it's still from the family. It's still the family Oer, which is running the shop. So it went over from father to son, father to son, father to son. And now apparently the daughter of the actual owner is planning on to take over the business. So it will go from the father to the daughter. So it's great because it stays in the same family. And this shop is very beautiful, really for very nice products. And they had a very famous client there many years ago, because the French Riviera became very famous thanks to different royalties. Kings and queens all over Europe used to come and spend the winter time in Nice. And the most famous tourist in the old time was Queen Victoria. And Queen Victoria spent several winters in Nice. And this this little shop already existed, Oer. And they said that a part of the shop used to be a place where you could have a coffee or a tea. You know, the British like to have their little tea. So people say that Queen Victoria has been there to have a little afternoon tea in the shop.
When is the best time for someone to come to Nice as a foodie?
I would say Nice is great all year long because of the climate. I told you 300 days of sun per year. So, I mean, if you like the beach, then it's great in the summer. If you don't like the beach, then, you know, there's in the winter and nice to walk around and visit places. And the market is all year long. So this beautiful market we just discussed is all year long, 6 days a week, Tuesday till Sunday. And so all year long. And of course, if you come to Nice, you're going to visit the rest of the French Riviera. And if you're a foodie, then of course you go to a town not far from there called Menton. And in Menton, we have a very famous restaurant, the Mirazur, which was ranked in 2019, maybe, probably, of course, you know, was ranked best restaurant in the world.
Absolutely. So when I had my tour, we had 3 Australians and 2 Americans come on my tour, a small group tour of the Côte d'Azur in September 2019. We had 7 nights on the Côte d'Azur, and we went to Menton for the day, and in the morning we went to where they make the lemon marmalade there in Menton, and then we went to the markets, and I told everybody that they had to be smart, wear smart casual for lunch, but I didn't tell them where we were going to lunch. And as we were walking back to the van that we had, I said, do you want to know where you're going for lunch now? And they all were going, yes. Where are we going? And I said, well, look up on the top of the hill. It's just a restaurant just up there on the top of the hill called Mirazu, and it's the world's number 1 restaurant. And we were very lucky and fortunate to have had dinner on the tour in the world's number 1 restaurant. And they were all foodies, and they had no idea that we were going there. Wow, it was a great surprise. It really was one of the best meals that I've ever had in my life. And Pascal, how do people book a private tour with you in Nice?
Well, I can. I have a website, of course, and I'm on social media. And
if you can just let us know what the website is.
So it's the name of a very famous Frenchman. The name of my website is called Napoleon Explorer.
Perfect. NapoleonExplorer.com. Pascal, it has been fantastic talking to you about all things Niçoise food and the Niçoise salad, and wonderful to learn a bit about a fabulous French foodie. We look forward to being able to come and visit you in Nice. I hope that the season's been good with things opening up, but obviously we all hope that 2022 will be a much better year and a much better tourist season for everybody. So hopefully that will be the case. Pascal, thank you for joining me on Fabulously Delicious.
Well, thank you very much, and looking forward to see you in Nice.
Yes, we look forward to coming and eating the Niçoise salad. Another wonderful culinary journey. I think we should call it today, learning all about Pascal and the delicious Niçoise salad. I don't think I'll be able to have another one again with tuna in it, let alone green beans and potatoes. Who knows what the French from Nice would say if I did. Pascal, it was fabulous learning about your journey into food, so thanks for sharing that with our Fabulously Delicious audience. Speaking of my Fabulously Delicious audience, thank you for joining me on Fabulously Delicious today. Don't forget, if you like this episode, then please subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Oh, and share the podcast around with your friends and family that are into food. I love to be shared around. Well, the podcast does, that is. If you'd like to support the making of Fabulously Delicious, then you can do so by buying me a croissant via the Buy Me a Coffee website. Or you can become a Patreon member if you'd like to support on a more continual basis. Any help is appreciated so that you can bring more fabulous people to Fabulously Delicious. If you're coming to Paris or France next year, you can book a 1-hour Zoom call with me. That's right, 1 hour with me to help you plan a fabulous trip. I'll give you great tips on where to eat, where to stay, and, you know, places to go, things to do, all those sorts of things. So check that out on my website, andrewpyerfabulously.com. In 2022, hopefully you'll be able to come join me in person here in Montmorillon for some wonderful cooking classes as well, or maybe even a small group tour of France. More info to come on the website soon for that, so check that out. I'm Andrew Pryor. My motto in life is whatever you do, do it fabulously. So why not join me every week here on Fabulously Delicious, the podcast. A bientôt and bon appétit.